Welcome to the Late Lunch Leftovers, where we take a look back at our best bits from last week. Howard is with me on Late Lunch, and he was a very busy boy. He went to a drumming circle to launch the Our Island, Our World Festival, caught up with a man trying to swim around the Isle of Man for charity, and joined our chat about mindfulness for children. We also heard how Charity of the Week, HBOT Isle of Man, is getting on with raising funds for the Hyperbaric Chamber. And first, Howard spoke to familiar voice Ricky Tomlinson about the changing face of funerals.
I've been reared on that, the little church service, and then, you know, the funeral service, and then a little gathering together. That's the sort of thing I want. And as I say, I've just been to two of the biggest sort of celebrity funerals in the country in the last few months. Sir Ken Dodd, his funeral was at the Anglican Cathedral, and Joe Longthorne, who recently got buried in Blackpool, and his service was in a Roman Catholic church, and it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing because they were different services, but both very dignified and lots of fun. There was lots of fun at them. The speakers at Joe's were Chubby Brown, Johnny Cass and Roy Walker, and Muddy Four Top Comics. And the speeches they made were hilarious. So there was times when the church was just roared. It was alive with laughter.
And do you think people are happy with that idea of laughter at a funeral? Because some people always seem a little bit wary about it, don't they?
I don't know why, you know. And it was the same at Doddy's. Doddy's was wonderful. It was in the Anglican Cathedral. It was packed to the rafters. He'd been drawn in his carriage along the route, and there was thousands and thousands of people out there showing their respect. And obviously the funeral service was absolutely fitting for it. I am old-fashioned, and so while there's other people who want to get shot into space and become back as do a fireworks, I just want an old-fashioned sort of church service and then whatever.
So you wouldn't want mourners to come along in bright clothes and people cracking jokes when you eventually, hopefully not for some time, but...
Oh, I don't mind them cracking jokes. No, I don't mind that. I don't mind them cracking jokes at all. But I just love the solemnity of it. I like the organ music as the coffin goes in and the people saying a few words. And then obviously there would be people that mine, I hope, who would get up and say a few words, and they would be obviously have people roaring with laughter. And that's what you want. You can have a good time and be happy as well as being dignified.
And Regan, just coming back to you for a second, do you think there's evidence that people are sort of less happy dealing with death now? Are they trying to make it lighter, or they just want a different way of dealing with the end of life?
I think this new generation's just moving forward, just reflecting their own life more, and some people are even opting for cremation without a service and having a private cremation but then having a big party afterwards. I think that's what I would like everyone to just celebrate my life when they're not as sad. Later on they can just have a big party, whether they want my ashes there or they don't. I quite like to be a lava lamp myself, but they can have, just a big party to celebrate.
And Ricky, coming back to you, you're saying you're going for a more traditional approach when the time comes. A few years off, we sincerely hope. But what about the idea, again, famously in the royal family, I think Nana was cremated and ashes put into an urn. Is that something you either have relation, you know, you can relate to, or something you'd like to... would actually like to happen to you, or do you prefer the idea, as I think I do, of going into a coffin and going into the ground?
I don't want ashes leaving everywhere, you know. It's whatever suits you, but I mean, I'm really fascinated this about, like, coming back as a tree. I wouldn't mind having a go at that. I think that's unique, and I think it's fabulous, and I think that's giving something back. You know, if you're the tree there, you're on the riverbank or overlooking something, I think that's great. But I wouldn't like to be stuck in an urn for the rest of my life. Be like being in jail.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
Sound of tribal drums, I think, Dave, beating in this year's Our Island.
Yes, right. Yes, the jungle drums have started. This is the launch, and we're delighted to be here, Howard.
And it's, well, I don't know, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before. If it's happened, I haven't been here. How many people there? 50, 60 people?
We had 60 drums, and I think there's only about one or two left. So, yeah, there must be nearly 60, I think.
And it's a bit of a far cry from July this year, when it's the centre of the island's attraction. It is again, but for a different reason. All these people here with djembes and just really, it's a great sort of... a great leveller, isn't it?
I'm sure that there's got to be a joke here somewhere, hasn't there? But I don't think maybe we'll go there.
I'm struggling to find it. It's just a cracking sight to see, though, isn't
it? It's wonderful, and we are so grateful to have permission to use the site. It is an ancient site, and this is an ancient form of communication.
It is, yeah.
And every bit as valuable as talking.
And whose idea was it? Your idea, or?
No, it was John Shakespeare's, who is always very good at these sort of theatrical sort of events. And you know, our world, our island, our world was delighted to join in. And John is doing this one, and then of course he's also doing workshops all over the island as well while he's here.
I say there are more tribal drumming workshops coming up. What else highlighting? It's coming up this weekend, the Our Island, Our World. What else have you got your eye on?
Well, particularly on the Saturday afternoon, which is our free family event in the cathedral grounds, I'm really, really looking forward to the Manx Bulgarian project, which is Dave Kilgallen, Paul Rogers, and three Bulgarian musicians. And I've heard it develop over the last 3 months, and it is absolutely wonderful. I'm delighted. You know, I can't tell you how good I think it's going to sound.
I'm really looking forward to that one as well. And just finally on the drumming again, I thought it might have just been a bit of a free-for-all, but it's actually quite structured. I think people are really learning a bit about how to play the drum bass, put these rhythms together. Tell us about our teacher today.
John Bowker. He's comes from County Clare. He travels all over Europe teaching tribal drumming and tribal singing. He's an expert on all sorts of African sort of communication and that sort of thing. And as you've heard yourself, he's a really, really good teacher, because I imagine a lot of these people here have never touched a drum in their life, and he's got them making a really lovely noise.
And they're all loving it too.
Yeah, they all seem to be having a great time, don't they?
I've got to get back and have a crack. You having a go?
Well, I've given my drum to somebody else. So what a guy.
The first for me in the Isle of Man, for sure. This is my first workshop here. I've been doing a lot of similar things in England and Ireland. We did a big event on Tara Hill about 5 years ago now, 6 years ago. Another one at one of the big temple mounds in County Meath. But this is the first in Ireland, first in Isle of Man. And what great fun it was. We had such a great turnout. I was just saying that what was great for me was we had, I think, from about 4 or 5 year olds up to about 75 year olds, and a big group, maybe 70 or more people. Yeah. And everyone was really on board with it. We played a Nigerian celebration rhythm, and we had people dancing and singing, and we sort of focused on bringing good energy to the place. There was this idea of sort of honouring all the different paths and different traditions, so we were doing our best to sort of, in a playful and light-hearted way, but we did honour the space as best we could.
Indeed, it's the seat of government on the Isle of Man. It's Timbal Day, where all the pageantry is, and I guess you were saying at the beginning there, sort of communication, so just as maybe on Timbal Day we're all communicating the laws to the people, this is a much more sort of primal way of doing it, the way the drums were speaking.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, right across the world, the drums and the singing would have been a way of communicating ancient traditions and customs and ensuring that they're passed on. And I think we've had one of the lovely things that's happened in the last 50 years or so is this cross-pollination. I've worked with singers from the Zulu people and the different tribes of South Africa, and their singing was influenced by the choral singing of Europe.
Yeah,
and then I'm learning their style of it, and then it's lovely, you know. It's just that music's one of these universal languages. That rhythm's the other one, really, that everybody can share. So combine the two, and we had people from all over, not just people from the island, but there was people from all over the place in that circle, and I saw a lot of smiles. It was a really nice experience. I really enjoyed myself.
The Late Lunch Charity of the Week. Please tell us your name and charity.
I'm John Horton. I'm the manager of the Hyperbaric Chamber. The charity name is Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy, Isle of Man.
How did the charity start and what is its purpose?
We have begun since the 31st of March this year, but it all began in 1983. The purpose of the Isle of Man Hyperbaric Chambers operations is to look after people who suffer from decompression illness, or known as the bend, for diving casualties, right through to multiple cirrhosis, problem wounds.
Tell us about your team.
The team that consists of the hyperbaric chamber at this time is really led by our retired hyperbaricist, David Downey. And then, of course, right next to him with many years' service is Debbie Barron, who's been a chamber operator for many years. And she has been supported by Keith Watterson, another chamber operator.
Who is the charity for?
The charity is for patients of the Isle of Man suffering from a very large range of treatments and therapeutical treatments that they require.
Which other organisations do you work with?
We work, obviously, with health. We work with doctors and we work mainly, obviously, with Nobles Hospital. Nobles Hospital, in due course, will be providing us with the medical cover, very, very needy and required, for hyperbaric oxygen on the Isle of Man.
What are your main goals?
The main goals of our charity is to heal people and do our very best to treat people who are our patients for a multiplicity of illnesses that they have.
How do you see the charity developing over the next 5 years?
What we wish to do over the next 5 years is, initially, we are now looking for to raise funds, and we've run a campaign for funds to have provided a brand new hyperbaric chamber on the Isle of Man, and we need as much funds as we can. And I appeal to many members of the public out there to support the Isle of Man Hyperbaric Chamber in whatever way they can, and in particular TT riders who have been treated by us before. We're looking to those to raise funds, hopefully over TT, in order to support us.
How is the charity funded?
The charity is funded mainly by public sponsorship and the public supporting the charity whenever they can by raising funds for the Isle of Man Hyperbaric Chamber.
How can people support you?
People can support us in many ways: by running sponsorships, simply donating money, and doing whatever they can, like any other charity, any other worthy charity on the Isle of Man, to support the aims of the chamber, which is to have a brand new chamber installed and then recommence treatment just as soon as we are able.
Where can people find out more?
People can find out more if they contact the HBOT, that's Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy Isle of Man. We are a registered charity. Our website is hbot.im.
Profile complete.
And Mike Cooley, and we are talking about mindfulness with children, and this is something that, Mike, you're very keen to encourage, aren't you? Because I'm guessing the younger that we can speak to children about being more mindful, the better it is.
Yes, and because, you know, we have a sort of mental health crisis at the moment in adults and in children, and the ages of which kids are feeling anxious and worried and getting conscious of kind of body image is getting younger and younger and younger. So ways to kind of, you know, improve that is positive mental health, positive emotion, things like that. And not just talking about it. I mean, that's one thing, is having the conversation so that we're more aware. But then what? You know, doing something, you know, you need to act upon it. And so mindfulness is just a really simple, basic, playful way of training positive mental health, training emotional intelligence, training positive ways of engaging with yourself and the world. And so that's kind of what we did just before with the balloon breathing. It's almost like step one is learn how to calm down. As I say, most adults can't do that. So it's great to encourage kids to do that. But again, especially if you're a parent or if you're a teacher or if you're just the bloke on the street, well, you are modeling behavior. As a parent, you're constantly modeling behavior. And so what really works is to also do these practices with your children. You know, they work for you too. You know, balloon breathing works to calm an adult down as well as your six-year-old. And just that doing it together. I mean, we were playing in the park yesterday, and there was an eight-year-old boy who was apparently meditating in the full lotus posture on top of the toy train roof.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I was like, what's he doing? Oh, he's meditating. He had the full kind of, you know, om going on. And I've met loads of kids just, you know, in parks and things, and when we're standing around watching our kids play, who are doing yoga postures and they're meditating. And it's, I didn't know it was that common, but that's really good news, is that the message is getting through, is that, yes, there are things you can do that are really simple and fun to encourage positive mental health. But it's the adults that have to lead that. So it's us. You know, it's not just, oh, you know, little Johnny needs to calm down. Well, probably you do too. And if you begin to engage in some of these practices and share them with your son or daughter, they'll learn from you. And you can both calm down. The whole family can calm down together.
The Nation Station, Max Radio.
I've been doing it now for about 14, 15 days, had a couple of enforced breaks, and I'm about three quarters of the way around now, and the weather, yeah, has not been altogether kind, but I suppose looking at it positively, it's meant there's been a real diversity of experiences there in terms of the swim. Some been, you know, very, very much sort of gentle affairs where I can really take it all in and enjoy my surroundings. Others have felt a little bit more like an endurance test and getting from A to B. And yesterday's swim up to Glenmore was a little bit like that.
So you basically started up the north of the island, you've gone all the way down the east coast, round the sound, back up the other side. So you're basically going up the west coast and finishing pretty much where you started again, presumably.
Yes, that's the idea. I'm coming up the west coast now. I'm just sort of transitioning really between that part of the southern part of the island, which is much rockier, a bit wilder, to the sandier northern end. And the idea is to finish the swim by going round the Point of Air, which is actually a very tricky swim, and one which has a slightly macabre resonance for me, because I've discovered through a bit of research into my family tree that there's a relative of mine who's recorded as having perished, drowned off the Point of Air in about 1720 something. So I'm both intrigued by that, and we'll be trying to same time put it at the back of my mind when I actually do the swim.
Indeed. What about going around by the sound, because there are some notoriously strong currents around there? How difficult was that?
In the end, it was a bit of a non-event, and that's really down to the great depth of local knowledge of the guys who've been accompanying me with this. They knew exactly what time to pick in terms of the tide. So we arranged it so that I finished the swim just at the entrance to sound, and then was able to begin the swim through the sound sort of at the ideal point in terms of tidal cycles. It was a bit like jumping into a river. I was immediately swept round the corner of the island, but it was in the direction I wanted to go, so there was no difficulty there. The other thing was that there were a lot of seals about, quite large adult seals, and I was quite keen not to disturb them because they're getting up to their breeding season, and also not to antagonize them in any way, because they're pretty big beasts. So that was on my mind too, but in the event, I was swept away so quickly from the point I started below the Sound Cafe that yeah, there was no problems in either regard, and I was quite quickly into the second half of my swim.
You're mentioning the animals there. Obviously, if you're swimming around an island, you have a unique perspective on the wildlife. And, of course, you're swimming to raise money for the Manx Wildlife Trust and Blue Marine Foundation. Any sort of unique experiences with the wildlife that you mentioned, seals, anything else that's been of interest as you've been going along?
Yeah, it's been fantastic in that regard. A real privilege. I mean, to swim around the island, it gives you a very different perspective. There's a real diversity and richness of life there. Yeah, it's been startling, eye-opening, and sometimes a little bit intense. I've had quite a few encounters with seals. Yeah, absolutely wonderful, magnetic creatures. They're, in some respects, so much like you know, very large aquatic dogs. But you always have to keep in mind that they're wild animals. And if they want to come and inspect you or even touch you, then you sort of have to go with the flow, but essentially keep still and not try to touch them back or interfere. But yeah, very companionable in many ways. I had one incident off Langness where one of them thought it was a good idea to check my feet by getting them into its mouth, which was, a little bit overwhelming, because at the same time I was being pushed backwards by a tidal current and stung in the face by a lion's mane jellyfish. And I was thinking, goodness, you know, having all these three things together is a bit much. But for the most part, having the seals around has just been an absolute delight and a real education. I mean, I wouldn't encourage anybody to get into sea looking to have an encounter with seals, because that's probably a recipe for something going wrong. But if you happen to be in the water and you're lucky enough to find that some seals come along and take an interest in what you're doing and the situation is in their control, then you'll probably have an eye-opening and very wonderful experience.
Those are all our late lunch leftovers for this week. Do tune in for the main helping on Manx Radio weekdays just after 2 p.m.
Every week, of course, we'll have our regular features with Duxford Diaries. We'll have Mark Tiley's Greatest Hit, Midweek Mindfulness, and plenty more with our monthly guests as well.
But for now, thank you so much for listening to the Late Lunch Leftovers podcast. We'll see you again next time.